everybody. Welcome to a Thursday edition Ye Olde Bulldog Hour. Kevin Rush alongside here as always until 3. CG will grab the reins and take over at that point. CGP until 6 o'clock. Sharks coming up a little bit later tonight. Reminders about tomorrow. We'll not only talk to Andrew and Marcus on a Friday, but at 3 o'clock, CG and myself will go over emails again at tdad1 at att.net, TDAD, the number 1, at att.net. A lot came in after the win last night for Fresno State basketball, and we'll talk to Jackson Moore and Daryl Howerton and what will be a Basketball Thursday all about what happened last night in Logan. But it all leads to Saturday and 5 o'clock, Fresno State and Nevada at Save Mart Center. We talked start of the week about the potential of the Bulldogs to be undefeated in conference play going into that game. It turns out that way. What we didn't expect is what happened last Saturday night to Nevada. But after the Wolfpack lost and fell to number 10 in the country and ended up with their undefeated season ending, we knew they would take it out on somebody. And just the good fortune of the San Jose State Spartans, scheduling-wise, they happened to be the ones headed last night to the Lawler Center, and they got smoked big time last night. And it wasn't that close, and they almost lost by 40 anyway. So let's just say this. The good news for the fan base of Fresno State is, while you may not be able to knock Nevada off now from an undefeated season, you are going to have the full and undivided attention of Musselman and company, because they are angry about what happened last Saturday, particularly after New Mexico follows it up at home by losing to UNLV on Tuesday night. So Saturday, 5 o'clock, tip-off show at 4:15. This is a huge game. I realize that the Rams and the Cowboys are opposite this thing at the same time at 5 o'clock, and the game is also basketball-wise on ESPNU. The Rams are on Big Fox. But please, if you have a chance to come out, this is the one. This is the type of thing we've talked about year after year in the past. Big opportunities that have gotten away. The Oregon game was an example of that last year. But this time, Fresno State has a legitimate chance against a team that may very well find itself in the Elite Eight or better. Be there if you can. It'd be great to see a crowd of 10,000-plus. Legit 10,000 fannies in the seats would be great. We'll see what happens at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Talk about that. Our good friend Jackson Moore, Barkboard.com, also publishes that San Jose State board and is immersed in basketball right now. So with that lead-in, let's bring up our regular correspondent for Fresno State basketball and football. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Jackson. I'm guessing you spent more time worried about that game in Logan last night than you did what was going on at the Lawler Center. Look, you had a time gap, though. You had plenty of time to get through the Fresno State game that started at 6 and immerse yourself in the goings-on at the Lawler Center. They didn't tip till 8, and that game was close right up until the national anthem. So was it a full 4 hours for you of your favorite basketball teams? Just wondering.
Oh, man. Well, there was that one point I was not so sure if Fresno State was going to be able to pull that thing out at Logan, and I was trying to weigh the odds. What are the odds of Fresno State pulling this game out or San Jose State getting the upset? And it seemed pretty even there until Fresno State really stormed back at the end, and Braxton Huggins made a pair of crazy shots there at the end, and it was so exciting with the Bulldog game. I spent most of my time writing stories and making sure we had that game covered rather than seeing San Jose State get blown out.
Yeah, you could have written this San Jose State story before it happened, and you know, knowing the mood that Nevada was in going into last night anyway because of what happened on Saturday. You know, we talk all the time about, at least for me because I'm a big auto racing guy, about the comparison auto racing to other sport. And you always ask somebody who's a race car driver, when do you want to lead? And they will say the last lap, right? Well, that was Fresno State. Not only did they lead only in the last lap, they basically took the lead in the fourth turn, heading back to the start-finish line last night, because they were literally behind the entire game, Jackson, as you know, until the last 5 seconds or so. And I guess that's all that mattered ultimately, right? I mean, that's all you count is the W. And because, first of all, the ability to hang around was huge. There's no doubt there were many times that with that crowd being fully involved and Utah State being undefeated at home, the Aggies were throwing haymakers, but I felt the Bulldogs dodged the big knockout blow a number of times. That's really what set up the ending. Did you feel that way as well?
Yeah, Tony. I feel like Coach Hudson's kind of rewritten the script on these kinds of games. We've seen in rebuilding years, which we kind of thought this one might be. I mean, there's a few senior players like Deshaun Taylor and Braxton Huggins we figured would carry this team, but it's been a lot better than expected, of course. But, you know, usually when you have first-year coaches in this conference, it's very hard to win on the road at all in conference, especially Utah State. That's about the toughest place as it gets. And then we've seen in the past few years, especially in the Coach Terry era, it felt like so many times his teams on the road against even or better opponents would fall behind kind of early and spend all game fighting and clawing back and then fall just a bit short at the end. And the Bulldogs kind of overcame both of those tales in this one where they go in a hostile environment. You know, they really haven't seen too many of them this year and overcome that Utah State home court advantage. They actually pull it out at the end after clawing back for a good about 30 minutes or so that they were really behind when Utah State started to go at the felt like pulled away in the first half. So, I mean, just a surprising way to do it overall and getting that win. And that's a big one, too. It's a really exciting way for Fresno State to be 3-0 and for Utah State a really disheartening way to fall to 1-2 because that's probably maybe the third or fourth best team in this conference right now.
Yeah, you're right on all counts, Jackson. The other thing is we've talked about an at-large. When you looked at the schedule and you – there's a mental checklist anyway, start to count W's and L's, and everybody does that. Coaches say they don't do it. They're lying to you. They do it before a season starts. They're not going to verbalize it, but and players do it as well. You look down the schedule and you say, okay, where do we figure to win? Well, I don't think you could have said we figured to win at Logan, given how strong Utah State is, particularly with the 7-0 start at home. Their four losses all on the road, the quality opposition. So you get one last night that maybe was one you put possibly in all likelihood in the right-hand column in the left. That's the kind of thing at the end of the year that can leave you in competition for an at-large. Now, we're a long way away, but this week sets up so importantly, and you get the first one. Now you come home to play Nevada, and if you get that one, Jackson, I realize you've got the trip to Boise, but then San Diego State at home. You get the one Saturday, you can start legitimately with then a two-game lead and a tiebreak over Nevada as a competitor to win the regular season title, which could lead to an at-large. I know it's a big projection, but it's still out there, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And that's probably the one thing that, I mean, even the Fresno State say they don't win the conference, but they win a lot of games along the way, have 20-plus wins, and have at least a resume to put out there for the tournament. The one thing they don't quite have right now is that major key win that they can put on that resume. And, of course, they'll have two shots at Nevada to try to do that, which would be a huge win. Even if the Bulldogs knock off the Wolfpack, they're sure to stay in the top 25 and probably the top half of it for quite some time unless they totally collapse. And it's just kind of wild, this team that I believe Nevada started, what, seventh in the nation to start the year. And we're talking about Fresno State having the chance to beat them on their home court. They'll be the underdogs for sure, but after coming off that Utah State game, the 12-3 record, it sure feels like they can compete.
You're right about that, and it is going to be a monumental task on Saturday because the loss at the Pit really refocused Musselman's crew, and not just because of the evisceration last night at home against San Jose State. That probably was going to happen regardless, but it does mean any chance that Nevada is resting on its laurels for Saturday coming up has been summarily dismissed. The Bulldogs and Wolfpack have played some enormously competitive games, both at Lawler at Save Mart Center over the years. But this has extra import for Nevada because they do not want that second loss, never mind conference. They don't want that second loss in the national landscape. So if the Bulldogs beat the Wolfpack, it will be because of a fully focused and involved Wolfpack team didn't have enough to handle the Bulldogs at home. Of course, Fresno State had that one loss to Utah Valley a couple weeks ago at home. Jackson, unpacking last night, so many little things. One is what happened at the end of the first half after Fresno State had fallen back by double digits, that little mini run that got them back to within eight. Now, I realize they fell back by 10 again, but that first half, Jackson, had it gone poorly the last couple of minutes, could have put Fresno State almost out of the game. How critical was it that the Bulldogs picked up those 8 points late to get themselves within hailing distance by halftime?
Yeah, I mean, even the last shot alone where Deshaun Taylor takes a step back three-pointer, if you switch the clock on that shot and Braxton Huggins' shot, they go down equally as impressive, and you'd be talking about Taylor as the hero, but it just so happened that Huggins came at the very end where Deshaun's three didn't seem all that meaningful at the time, but both very, you know, impressive shots that took a lot of skill to make them with just seconds left on the clock. I mean, Fresno State, if they go down at half by 11, that's three more points, and you could tell throughout that game it took every possession to try to just get within that one possession and then for Huggins to hit that three. So it really, I mean, the Huggins shot was huge. It's the game winner, but in a 40-minute game, those last points Fresno State scored at the end of the first half were just as critical.
The other thing is the play that Bittner made on Keita was huge because and the dunk almost went in anyway, right?
Yeah.
But it was Bittner getting in there, and that's a big young man playing center for Utah State, and it did point out the battle that we figured Fresno State would have with size all year long, right? Low block, the Bulldogs are still outsized. But because Bittner stuck his nose in there literally, he kept this from potentially being a four-point game, because if he doesn't get in there and all it was a marginal foul on that dunk, if it's a dunk that gets through and then the throw comes in, you're down four, and for all intents and purposes, Jackson, you've lost the game. That kept him in. And then that final play by Huggins, and look, I'm not going to criticize Smith, although I will tell you this. The officials need to get on coaches, because it looked like Utah State, and I'm not talking about the foul disparity. We'll get to that in a minute. But at the start of the game, it looked like Utah State was playing six on the court because Smith was out there. The coach was actually out. He wasn't on the apron. He wasn't merely on the sideline. He was standing within the confines of the 94 by 50. And I know he settled down later, but you cannot allow a coach to go out there and play defense, for goodness sake, and that's pretty damn close to what was going on, right? But you had a situation, Jackson, where if I'm coaching Utah State, I know, given the foul disparity all game long and the fact the Bulldogs are on the road, that you're probably going to look to win the thing down two. The Bulldogs got the gift on the missed throw, so you're down two. Were you surprised that Utah State didn't do everything it could to get the ball out of Huggins' hands because he was red hot? Were you surprised they allowed it to go to a man-to-man situation there?
Well, it's tough because, I mean, you can man up on Huggins way out there, almost 40 feet from the hoop, it seemed like, when he was trying to get the ball. But you also have Deshaun Taylor who could drive to the rim, and even when you got one-on-one with Huggins, I mean, they probably should have doubled him at that point. But, I mean, to go ISO that far away from the rim and to make a double move, that was really on Huggins just making a spectacular offensive play with a mismatch on that defender. Again, the Aggies probably should have put more pressure on Huggins, but that was a difficult shot. And you know, most players that they face probably don't make that shot.
Yeah, and that's fair, and I'll tell you what, I would be in total agreement with that logic if not for the fact that Huggins already had 30 at that point, you know,
yeah.
And had been really hot from three, and he brought it up afterward. The other thing is, we have talked so often that last year in particular, and the Bulldogs, of course, were manpower short and all of that stuff for a lot of the year, Deshaun toward the end of the year was trying so hard to make things happen. He was driving into the tall trees, getting rejected, and it was not working out well for the offense. He had the drive late, didn't get the call. The fact that there was another teammate to pick him up, in this case Huggins, how big was it, Jackson, that even though Taylor was not able to finish the one drive, the Bulldogs still got it back, and it didn't have to be Deshaun to win or lose the game for him this time?
Yeah, I mean, that was huge, and even going into that last possession, down two, that might be a situation where a lot of the times you might want to drive, see if you can pick up 2 points or at least get fouled and go to the free throw line, but Utah State was just such a mismatch with the Bulldogs inside where they had 9 blocks, and, of course, the center was making life difficult for Taylor and several others all game long, And really the best shot for the Bulldogs was to shoot from three-point range. In fact, they were shooting better percentage-wise from three-point range than inside the arc for the game. So it was big that they had someone that was ready to take that shot. And really we saw Taylor, again, make that shot at the end of the first half, which was somewhat similar. But, you know, Huggins was so hot and he felt so confident that he could knock that down if he got the look.
The other thing is Deshaun really showing his ability to be a distributor, because we've talked about Blackwell finding guys open with Taylor out, but here's Taylor with a 2-for-3 night from three-point range, yet he was always looking to distribute, including to Huggins, who was 8-of-13. So it tells you Deshaun was willing to be deferential to a guy who really had it going in Huggins, who I'm guessing, Jackson, is close to full health again, because the questions had come in, what was wrong with his shooting? What was wrong? He's been sick the last couple of weeks, right? This just wasn't some case of the sniffles. He had a legit flu problem, and I know it weakened him. Do you know at all if he was back to 100% physically last night? It looked like Utah State hopes that was the case. They'd hate to think they were beaten by a guy who was still sick. But do you think that's what the problem had been the last few games? He just has not. I mean, first of all, he was out because of it. He just hasn't been physically ready to go again.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't play against San Jose State. He tried to play but sat in the locker room all game long while the Bulldogs went on to that win against the Spartans. And then he came off the bench against Colorado State and just clearly not quite the same. Didn't play a whole lot of minutes. And it's not just being sick or not being in rhythm as far as playing games. It's all the days of practice that he had to miss where you get those reps in. And as a shooter, you've got to be in there every day taking a ton of those reps to be comfortable in the game. And I assume that he got some in the few days of practice before the Utah State game because he was on a different level last night.
And the other thing about that as a team, and you referenced it, 15 of 31 from three, while the home team was 6 of 20. You don't see that very often simply because in a facility like Spectrum, and I talk about being a large gymnasium, and that's the feel. You know, it is a mini Celland Arena, if you will, in a lot of ways, the way the seating is. It's not a big place. It's a very intimate facility, and it's one where you can really get the crowd behind you because the students showed up big last night. But also, Jackson, as opposed to what the Bulldogs have gone through, not so much as bad anyway as it was at the start, but they still go through it where they practice at the North Gym but play at Save Mart Center. Utah State is in that facility, Spectrum, all the time to practice. To have them on their home floor go 6-20 while you're going 15-31, boy, that is not something you expect to see on the road in this conference.
No, not at all. And I mean, that's a testament, I think, to Fresno State shooters. It wasn't just Huggins either. Deshaun Taylor, 2-for-5. Noah Blackwell, 3-for-5. Sam Bittner hit a pair. And if you take a poor New Williams, who went 0-for-7 now, the Bulldogs were 15-for-24 from three-point range, which is ridiculous. And the strangest thing to me is that Coach Hudson said after the game, the game plan was really to drive and attack the rim, and it felt like Utah State's defensive game plan was to stop it and, you know, swat all those shots that got there in the paint. And, you know, the Bulldogs fall back to a 48% three-point shooting night with the kind of plan B. And if you have shooters that can do that, that's pretty special, and it gives you a shot to win even when your game plan folds early.
Well, and particularly if going in you're told you're going to be out attempted at the line 30-6, you're going to guess you're going to lose the game. That's all there is to it. The only way you're going to win it is to shoot as well as the team did. But we have talked about the fact that particularly from the backcourt, and Bittner also factors into this, Fresno State, the old make-or-miss league we talk about in the NBA all the time, Fresno State is capable of shooting themselves into a victory, which is what happened last night. Even if they're outsized, even if the calls are going against them, they are capable as a shooting entity to beat somebody from the floor, and that's what happened last night. I want to ask you about the last sequence. You have 5.5 seconds to go. Of course, in the college game, you can't advance it to half court with a timeout, so you know it was going to be 94 feet. The three itself, Jackson, was a desperation three that wasn't that close. But Quinn Taylor had a great chance for that follow, and I'm just curious if you've gotten any confirmation whether that would have counted had it gone. That was going to be close. I think he got it off in time. He might have rushed it. It'd be understandable because he was battling the final buzzer. But if that goes down, do you think it would have counted?
Yeah, watching it live, I felt like he got it off. Of course, after he missed, they didn't go to the replay a whole bunch of times to examine how close it was. So I'm not sure what the second look might have been like. But watching live, I certainly, when the ball hit his fingertips, I felt like, oh, here we go. You know, the disappointing dagger here by Utah State, but it just wasn't quite there, and the Bulldogs were able to survive. And just a bizarre game, lead for 5 seconds and get the win. That's not usually the kinds of wins we see Fresno State scratch and claw and win for. And even looking back at the Miami game not too long ago where they hit the Bulldogs with the last-minute tip dunk to beat Fresno State, I was glad to not see that happen twice for the Bulldogs. That would have been rough.
Yeah, you're right, because that was that Johnson drive that turned out to be just right for Miami to win. And Jackson, and I guess if Fresno State's going to take one, they're going to take the conference win, right, over there.
Right.
I know they would have liked to have them both. But I will tell you this about this team, and we brought up start of this conversation. The fact that they were able to hang around in a game that there was every reason to fall out of mentally and otherwise, right? You're not getting the calls. You're on the road. Like I said, the students showed up big. School's back in session there, I believe, now. And so you had a situation where Fresno State had everything against it, yet Jackson, the old Bum Phillips line, they didn't let go of the rope. And I guess if there's something more than the fact that you wanted to win, and you did, taking out of this game for the coaching staff, it was that the Fresno State team just would not let this get away. And because of it, they clawed and scratched their way to that opportunity, made the decision at the timeout, we're going to go ahead and see if we can win this thing. And Huggins put it down. But you know what? If you don't hang close, it's not going to matter at the end. You just would have, you would have playing for stats. That's all you would have been playing for late, not to win the game, right?
Yeah, and usually with a team like Fresno State in that situation, you'll see them make a run, and then Utah State make their run. But this was a game it felt like Fresno State was constantly down between 5 to 9 points and could never quite get over the hump. They hit a three-point deficit a few different times, but by the time they got the ball back, Utah State had already pushed it back to 2 possessions. And it really wasn't until those last few minutes where Fresno State finally had the ball in their hands with the chance to take the lead, and fortunately they took advantage of it.
Now, moving forward, because particularly in basketball, even in football, it's enjoy it, right, for that night and then forget it. In basketball, particularly in conference play, it's enjoy it and the bus trip back to Salt Lake City and the flight home. You hope you can get in for the fog. I have no idea what time they got back today, but you forget it in a big hurry no matter who you're going to play. In this case, it's particularly important to forget about it because Nevada's here on Saturday. Jackson, the only downside of the game was the fact that the size did bother Fresno State a great deal. Now, that Keta in particular showed a center who doesn't have the greatest offensive moves in the world, but he's good around the bucket and was really willing to distribute the ball. I mean, that's the great upside for Utah State. You have a center who's looking to feed the perimeter. The problem is they didn't shoot it well, thank goodness, last night from the perimeter. But are you worried about that size in Nevada, which is substantial for Fresno State to deal with Saturday, and the fact that the Wolfpack don't feel like losing again in conference?
Yeah, the biggest thing probably for the Bulldogs is to try to keep Nate Grimes out of foul trouble. That's the biggest thing, because when he's in there, he can usually match up. He described himself as little. Of course, he's not the biggest center out there, but he's athletic and talented enough to handle his business against most players that are going to be posed up against him. I think even against some players like Nevada has. I think the Wolfpack are so dangerous because they've got a lot of those 6-7 guys that are still athletic and can dribble the ball, and you can have a big lineup that's still athletic and dangerous from the perimeter too. So for Fresno State, they were able to get enough minutes out of Christian Gray and Lazaro Rojas to hold Keta and not fold with that height disadvantage. But it's all up to Nate Grimes in my mind. If he's out there, the Bulldogs are in good shape. And if he's in foul trouble, you definitely see a drop off.
The other question will be about the crowd I've mentioned. First of all, it was supposed to be a rainy Saturday. Now, from what I understand, we might get rain late tomorrow and some on Sunday, but Saturday it should not be a situation that keeps people away. We know the game is on ESPNU, so it's always an option to stay and watch it on TV. The Rams and the Cowboys will impact the crowd. There's no doubt in my mind for the casual fan with that game starting at 5 o'clock, same time the Bulldog game starts. It's a tough choice because there are a lot of Cowboy fans around and obviously still a lot of Ram fans in the market. So you take that into consideration. But, Jackson, given the import of the game and the fact that, you know what, you're coming off of a football season that had such a great vibe to it, are we going to see 10,000-plus there, legit 10,000 in the place when the game starts? Or is that asking too much?
You know, Tony, I'm not sure. It's a tough read. We've seen there's been a few games, Long Beach State, when the football team was honored, we saw a boost in attendance. And against Cal, of course, we saw more fans for that one. But the announced attendance was still around 6,000. But you could definitely feel a bigger presence. Fans have been excited for this one, I think, for some time. And I'm glad Nevada at least stayed in the top 10 after falling against New Mexico. I think there's that more novelty of the Wolfpack coming in, that they're still a top 10 team and one of the best, really, that's ever come to the Save Mark Center against Fresno State. And the Utah State win that we experienced last night is going to be huge as well. I think had the Bulldogs fallen, you know, maybe a lot of people check out and don't bother, but this has kind of sparked the excitement, I think, of some of those casual fans that might make that trip to the Save Mark Center on Saturday. And I think by far it'll be the best crowd of the night or of the season. If they hit 10,000, I'm not sure. That's a huge jump up from what we normally see. But
right.
I definitely expect to see a much larger than average crowd at the Save Mark Center, and one that should be, you know, excited with national TV and the stakes that are on this game. And we'll see if the Bulldogs can handle the kind of added pressure that they might get at the Save Mark Center.
That's a fair look. I would say this, Jackson. Given the circumstances around the day that we've already delineated, if you can get 8,000 plus, I think you're doing pretty well. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think the goal should be to fill as much of that lower bowl as possible. I think it's about 9,000+, and if you can fill the majority of that, you can really have a nice home court advantage and something that's not there at the Save Mark Center night in and night out currently.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, last thing for you, my friend. Have a great weekend, and I look forward to your coverage on Saturday. I had the email about Jalen Hurts and the question about whether a Jalen Hurts would come to Fresno State. Cam and I were just talking start of the week, Jackson. You and I have discussed this, that if Fresno State had a Power 5 schedule, if they were in an expanded Pac 14 or whatever it might be, just a theoretical, we know it's not going to happen, that the schedule and the money would be there, and then with a coach like Tedford, you could very well pull a Jalen Hurts in. Are you in agreement about that, that the only thing that stops Fresno State from getting the five-star or four-star guy consistently is just the fact they can't guarantee that schedule? For the SoCal kids, for instance, the guarantee that SC and UCLA would have to come here, et cetera, is that the only thing stopping this program from being a national power right now? Because number 18 is not bad to end the year, but
yeah,
I'm upper echelon. Is that the only thing stopping them at the moment?
Yeah, I think so, Tony. It's the biggest difference, that patch on the jersey that makes a SoCal kid want to go to, say, Oregon State or Washington State. Or, you know, I know the Cougars have done really good this past season, but typically year in and year out, you see quite a few of those 3-4-star guys that will go to one of those schools over at Fresno State, which, you know, the Bulldogs are a lot closer to home. I assume the weather's a lot more favorable than what they're used to, and it seems like a more sensible location. But of course, the Pac-12 and the prestige that comes with it sway a lot of them. For Jalen Hurts in particular, I don't know if the Bulldogs are actively pursuing any sort of transfer quarterback like that. I know they're really confident with Jorge Reyna and some of the other options they have. But when you determine that, then it comes down to a Hurts dialing up Coach Tedford's number. And while, you know, that's actually, you might have some quarterbacks that'll do that with Coach Tedford's resume and everything that he's known for, but Hurts in particular might be a long shot to do that with some of the other options that he has.
Nice to talk about the possibilities, though. Thomas had emailed in, and anytime we can have that kind of discussion with legitimacy, that it's great to have. All right, so let you go, my friend. The last word comes from our good buddy Don, who said, Tony, all the good seats are $48 plus food. Yikes. $15 will be okay per seat. So guess what I'm going to do? I know what you're going to do, Don. You're going to be watching ESPNU. Jackson, I guess this is something the university is going to wrestle with, right?
Yeah, I know some of the seats that are available are going for $15. I think they're at the other end, sort of the behind the baseline, but I know they're available. There's a lot of seats that have been opened for purchasing in the past few weeks, and this one might be a little bit of a tougher ticket to get.
Well, hopefully people will find a way to get out there. Jackson, appreciate it. I know you'll be there. I'll talk to you next week, my friend. Take care.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys. Jackson Moore, take a break. Come back with Daryl Moore Basketball Talk on this Thursday on the Bulldog Hour on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. Just about 2:39 here until 3 with the Bulldog Hour. Then CG will come up, bring you to 6 o'clock. Sharks a little bit later tonight on 940. And we're back tomorrow with Andrew and Marcus. And then Christopher and myself will have the full email hour at 3 o'clock for you as well. Keep in mind, Christopher's on in the morning on Fridays from 7 to 9. And then George will have the zone from 4 to 6. Bulldog basketball, 4:15, the pre, 5 o'clock. The tip as Nevada comes in. Fresno State women on the road. They are also undefeated, so a great start in conference, 6-0 total between the two teams, Fresno State women's and men's teams. Also to our good friend Don. Don, I know you're going to be there. I said before the break, when Don was pointing out the cost of the tickets, that he would be staying home to watch it on ESPNU. I was being facetious, Don. I was trying to make a point, however. There are some people, whether it's $48 or 15, that will opt to stay home. I hope there's a great crowd, but anytime the game is easily accessible, which is not always the case on the internet, and goodness knows I heard a lot about last night because you have the production coming from Utah State. I was also relieved to hear that a number of people did get to the stadium app and get it through Roku, etc., where you don't have the buffering that you have through your PC. But anytime it's on the internet only, I think a lot of people still feel as though, you know what, it's not the right experience for them, so they will find a way to get to the game. When it's on one of the networks, like ESPNU, where the production value is basically the same as ESPN or ESPN2, there is the temptation to stay home. Don, I know you will be there at the game. I hope a lot of people do go. If they don't, please listen to the game on our air and watch it on ESPNU if you can't make it. All right, let's bring up our great friend Daryl Howerton, HoopMag.com, NBA.com, longtime media relations officer at Fresno State back in the 1920s. Daryl, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I do that to you because it's lonely. You know, you talk about the lonely island. That's me getting S-hammered constantly about allegedly being older than everybody at the station, which is ridiculous. You know that's not true. Okay. All right. Let's talk quickly about last night. I was just talking to Jackson about it. Daryl, not only the fact they won, but the manner in which they won the game last night, those are the kind of games that have been getting away in recent memory. How important from your point of view was it for this team to take all the body blows in a tough place to play and leave with a left-hand column getting an extra digit for you? How about that?
It just goes to show you how much this team has grown. And not only the course of, you know, a couple months when Fresno State had a couple close games against very good competition in the Wooden Legacy Tournament and lost them and learned some valuable lessons. But I'm even going back to last year where Fresno State lost twice to Utah State, you know, who has a great fan, student cheering section, and great, you know, team that can, you know, will their way to victories. And in this case, Fresno State would not bend to their will. They stayed in the game, even though they struggled with some bench points, you know, on the road, even though they had foul trouble with different players at times. They stuck in there, hung in there, never let the game get away, and were able to steal at the very end with one of the best halves of basketball I've ever seen at Fresno State, Braxton Huggins, and the show he put on the second half. Unbelievable.
Yeah, people had mentioned it was Curry-like last night. Certainly his range was at least Trae Young-like, if you want to look at the more recent times in college. By the way, let me amend this. Not an extra digit, an additional win If it's an extra digit, they could have 113 wins, whatever it might be. So not an extra digit, but an updated digit. How about that? In the proper column. Darryl, did you expect the way it was going down the stretch for Fresno State to even get that possession? Because every time it seemed as though the Bulldogs were ready to fall out of the game, somebody in Fresno State's side made a play. But then Utah State would counter, even though they did not, the Aggies didn't shoot it well from three, enough to get back to a cushion that kept Fresno State at bay. Did you expect the Bulldogs, as you were watching that last 5 minutes, that they would finally get a possession to say, okay, we have got a chance to steal this thing. Let's get out of here with a W.
I actually did. I actually had the phrase going through my head, you live and die by the three. And most of the time people use that phrase, they use it after a loss because they couldn't hit their three-pointers. But Fresno State was so good on their three-pointers for the most part. To live and die by the three, I think we're alive. We're alive because of the threes. The three is keeping us in the game, so let's keep living. Let's keep living. And, to see Braxton Huggins hit those two threes in the last 90 seconds of the game, like you said, that's what helped Fresno State steal this game when Utah State, leading for all but 5 seconds of the game, had to feel they had the game in hand. They just had to put it away, but the Bulldogs would not give it up. And that last 5 seconds, I probably replayed that and watch that for the next 10, 15 minutes. I mean, I've seen those last five seconds so many times. I watched it more than the game, probably.
Well, if that's the case, then you can answer the question, because I was down. I was watching thing on computer down south. Well, Kuzma went nuts. You remember him, don't you? Fresno State bumped into Kyle Kuzma at a regional, if you recall.
What he was Kyle Kuzma.
That's right. And at the time, nobody thought that it would be Kuzma that would be the better player than Pirtle. We figured Kuzma would be a good player. I don't think anybody thought he was going to be this good. He is really, really good, by the way. So I didn't get a chance to see the play at the end over again. I also mercifully had to have the sound down, which evidently, from what I understand, given the Utah State home announcer, I was probably a break from what all the emailers tell me, that I couldn't hear what was going on.
New Mexico. But
I got those Gino emailed and said, great win for New Mexico last night. Evidently, that's who was playing. That must have been a tough week for New Mexico. They were fatigued by the time they finished three games in just 5 days, whatever it was. But I don't know how that happened or why repeatedly that would happen. But the final play, I was just asking Jackson about it. I just seen this happen, by the way, coincidentally, last week in Miami with none other than Dwayne Wade, who had an air ball that he caught and had enough time on the final possession to flip it back in, but he didn't know he had the time, and he rushed it, and he actually overlaid it and put it right back over the rim again. Then he saw on the big screen what had happened, and he was, very upset. Taylor looked to me like he was really upset afterward because he felt, Darryl, that he blew what was an uncontested reverse layup there, admittedly over his head. As you watch that replay, was that going to count? Because he had it uncontested after he caught the thing. Was it a case where the Bulldogs really dodged one big time at the end?
Yeah, it's so hard to tell because of as you were alluding to with the feed that we got. The clock would go down from 1.9 to 0.9 to 0, so you didn't get to see the normal progression of 3-2-1-0 and all the other type of stuff. So it did appear as if, if he had time to collect himself a bit more, he may have been able to do it. But I'm not even sure myself. That's part of the reason I watched it numerous times, because that was one of the many aspects that I had to focus on. And even after all that, because of the clock and the way the production value of the way the clock was shown,
right,
I had trouble figuring out for myself. And, I spent so many other times breaking down how Braxton was breaking off, using the pick and roll from Nate Grimes and then breaking him off the dribble. There were just so many aspects to that play that was just so fun to break down and watch that, there really were, you could do five-minute segments on each aspect of the play on both sides of the floor.
I was just asking Jackson, I'll ask you, I understand with the Bulldogs down only two, and it was huge, one more time that Bittner stuck his head in there, because that's what he had to do to stop Kadup from getting the dunk. If he gets the dunk and the foul, he might have been able to make it a four-point game. Instead, it forced him to line. He got one of two. So now you're only down two. So I know that Smith and company had to be worried on the Utah State bench that Bulldogs would just go at the rim to tie it. But given the fact that Huggins was unstoppable, already had 30, had been red hot from three, were you surprised that they allowed him to catch it without any help at all, or was that out of respect for the rest of the Bulldogs out there and the fact it was only a two-point game?
I think it was a combination of all that. They had the rim protector in there, and they had all the different aspects of the game covered for most of the game. And, you know, and Braxton, as hot as he was, you know, they did do a good job of defending. He had to take a 25-footer to win it. And, you know, God bless him, he did. And, you know, and we've seen him do that before. We've seen him hit those type of shots. And anybody who watched New Mexico State basketball saw that too. So, you know, I could understand where they thought they had him well enough defended, because most people, that's a 25% shot at best. Right. You know, even Kobe Bryant hitting game winners from 25 feet straight on, he was a 25% shooter, and he's as clutch as it comes. So I could understand Utah State being willing to let a college basketball player try the same Kobe shot and have less than a 25% chance of winning. I could understand that.
Yeah, I can understand that point of view, too, although I can tell you when a guy is hot, you can tell the body language. And the way Huggins, I mean, first, I've told you this how many times. Distance is not the problem, because, you know, if you know how far you're going to normally shoot the basketball, if you go up uncontested with your feet planted and your shoulders squared, sometimes the easiest shot to take is the one that's at the limit of your range, only because you know how far it's going to go. In other words, you don't have to worry about going back rim on it. You go up and say, this is where I normally, if I put everything into it, it's going to go. And I thought that you had a guy in Huggins who knew he was going to make that shot. He knew he was going to take it. I know where he was headed right away. He had no desire to drive it to 21 feet or whatever. He was going to take it from there. But he had the body language of a guy who said, this thing is going to be nothing but net. And it was absolutely dead center. I thought Utah State should have been more aware. But your reasons, I think, are relevant enough. But guess what? Fresno State gets on the bus with a W, right?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, as you know, for Fresno State, that's a very efficient shot. When we're talking about the Bulldogs, you know, not only were they hot last night with the three-pointers, they've been hot all season long. So, you know, from Fresno State's perspective, you want that shot. If you have a 35 or 40%, if that's your three-point average shot at winning the game, you take it. Rather than taking, let's say, a 50% shot at tying the game, because even then you have to go through overtime and, there's, you know, that's a 50% chance you win that. So the odds were really in Fresno State's favor to play it that way. But the thing about Braxton is that half he played really was one of the greatest halves in Bulldog history that, you know, really needs to be, you know, highlighted, you know, because, it, you know, he's already established himself as one of the league's best players this year. And to go do that at Utah State on the road in a game where Fresno State is trying to differentiate itself from number two and number three in the conference. And who knows, if Fresno State beats Nevada this Saturday, all of a sudden we're not talking about Bulldogs being two or three. We're talking about number one.
You're right about that. Also, the point I'm making about Huggins, he certainly can shoot it deeper. He can shoot the ball from 30 or beyond. I'm just saying that shot around 25 is something
yes.
within his comfort zone. He's just a guy, I think he says to himself, you know what, natural flow, natural rhythm, that's about, without effort, how far I'm going to shoot this thing. So now all you have to do is worry left and right. Do I not sound like a guy who's explained this to coaches benching me for too many jump shots?
You're exactly right. I mean, the 21, you know, three-point shot is one thing. But where Braxton shoots it from 25, 26, you know, that just, you know, very few people can do it like that. So now the word's out in the conference, he's one of those guys. And I don't think you're going to see other coaches let that slip by, because I'm sure every Mountain West coach saw that highlight, saw what he did in the second half, saw what he's done throughout the season, and that will not happen again.
I just love the jump shooters, I'll tell you. Also, look, that's not all there is to Huggins' game. He can finish at the rim, as we saw at the Fullerton Legacy. You know, he's just a guy who came back to the Valley, and Fresno State is better for it, and that Bakersfield connection has been big for Hutt, that's for sure. All right, in the last 30 seconds.
And the great thing about Braxton also is, the other stuff, if they try to take that away, he'll just find other ways to exploit them. I mean, even if they try to take it out of his hands with two, he's a willing passer. He's a willing driver.
Yep.
He can shoot it from 15-20. So they're never going to be able to fully stop him. Once they come up with one, you know, stop movement for him, he'll be able to counter to the next.
And you had Taylor looking to distribute, and, of course, Blackwell always does, so it makes for a very powerful backcourt. All right, last 30 seconds. You know, Don brought up the point about the ticket prices. You and I have talked about this before. Through it all, $48 for good seats, $15 for okay seats. That is the backdrop. What are we going to see? Are we going to see major attendance jumps here starting with Saturday?
I don't know. It's really risky to say because you know, there are no $5 seats. There's, you know, if we knew, like, if I wanted to go to a UCLA game tonight, I know there's $5 tickets available or whenever their next game is. The $15 minimum will be the question. So I don't know if that guarantees a full house. I do know they're going to get their money's worth at $15, $48, or whatever you choose to spend because this is the game of the year and it really needs to be packed. But there's no cheap seats in the house as far as, you know, $5 type things. There's, you know, $15 is the minimum. So, you know, I don't. We'll see. I hope it packs out.
Anytime you have national television, you always fight it. That's for sure. And the NFL playoffs are there. Hopefully, a lot of people show. And Nevada is going to come in as they did last night, angry and ready. So if the Bulldogs win, they are most assuredly going to put this one up as one of the great wins they've had in a while. Darryl, appreciate it, my friend. Talk to you next week. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, guys, Darryl Howerton, take a break, wrap it up, send you off to CG on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.